This is We Teach Languages, a podcast about language teaching from the diverse perspectives of real teachers.
I'm Lisa Shepherd, and today on episode 37, you will hear a portion of my interview with Laura Terrell, the author of the Axel book, The Keys to Planning for Learning. After you listen to this excerpt, listen to the entire interview on YouTube, and please join us Thursday nights on Twitter by following hashtag LangBook and hashtag LangChat.
Welcome, everyone. I'm here with the language guru who we all love so much, who has written the Bible for us language teachers, The Keys to Planning for Learning. And we are so grateful to have you here. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
So a question that a lot of people have is sometimes they're in a district that says you have to use this textbook. So do you have tips for people who have to use the textbook but know that that textbook is not the tool that's going to help their students become more proficient?
I always think it's kind of a misnomer when teachers say they have to use a textbook, when we were all taught that the textbook is not the curriculum. So I think that if a district is really saying they have to use a textbook, the teacher who wants to push some change forward needs to say, okay, I agree. Could we make a list of what our students need to be able to do by the end of the year apart from the textbook? You know, not that it wouldn't look at the textbook, but still in terms of can-do statements, what should they be able to do? So that now the textbook starts to become the resource instead of the day by day, I have to do this.
So if the response from the colleagues is they need to be able to conjugate être, conjugate avoir, make adjective agreement, list 10 family members, then what's our next step?
So then I get very cynical and I ask that teacher, and you know, with respect, when have you ever been asked to do that on the streets of Madrid or on the streets of Paris? You're setting bridge goals. You're not playing the game. You're memorizing the rules. So it's like a baseball player who can recite the rules of baseball but can't go out on the field and play it. You're not giving me meaningful real world goals. You're giving me steps to real world. And most people can step back, especially if they watch children learn first language, and realize that conjugating a verb is not how we learn language. It's so you just have to kind of keep pushing. Have you been asked to do this on the streets of? And if the answer is no, you're not at a goal yet. So you don't have to argue about the verb. You just have to say it's not a goal.
It's not a goal. And then a lot of times the follow-up I've heard is, well, what about the college placement exams and the IB test and the AP test? And
so we know that IB and AP have no discrete point grammar or vocabulary any longer. And I would recommend that departments, if they have not, go and get a sample AP exam and take it together as a department for professional development. So that, and that could be done at any level, so that they can see what the end goal is, what students really have to be able to do with language. The other thing that I ask is, when should we start worrying about those college placements exams? Because if we don't keep them through senior year, then there's no worry at all, because they're probably not taking an exam. So when you have a teacher who's teaching a lower level or middle school saying college placement, that's making a big assumption that they're going to stay with us the entire time. And that's when I ask districts to pull their data and show me what their retention rates are up through level 4 or 5, so we can see how many students we're talking about. So because if they stick with us, we have plenty of time to not start teaching the grammar, but refine the accuracy of the language, because that comes with time. It doesn't come because you memorize a verb in a certain year at a certain time.
Exactly. I know what I've heard you say that made such a difference and that I've shared with other people is you've talked about when you take a group to France, to wherever country, that it's your C student who's out there talking to everyone and the A student is just huddled in a corner someplace.
That's right. The C students usually surface as the ones who are risk takers And that's what we need in order to be able to use a language. I shared the other day, my son, whose French is probably rusty, managed to use it when a skier who spoke only French where he was working broke her leg in two places.
Oh,
I bet you he made a lot of mistakes, but I bet she was really grateful there was a French voice in her ear.
I'm sure she was.
I think we need to remember he had the courage to speak, and some of our straight A students would say, well, I might make a mistake. And we create that when we start focusing on accuracy too quickly.
I couldn't agree more. I know personally with my students, as it stopped being about accuracy and memorizing a certain number of verbs and spellings that didn't make sense, students did have more confidence, and it's that confidence that kept them in the class. So I think that's so important. Thank you. So are there other questions or things that you can think of to talk to us about that we haven't thought of asking?
So you had one on your list that comes up a lot, and it's about when assessment should occur. And so if a thematic unit is going to last 6 or 9 weeks, and now you're not going to be grading as much, most teachers do have a need to put grades in the grade book. And so the interpretive assessments, because that's your input piece, are probably front loading what you hope that they can produce in the other mode. So it would be logical that interpretive could come in at week 2, week 3, week 4, and be interspersed more towards that midpoint, be finished maybe 2/3 of the way. Then the presentational might come in near the end with the interpersonal being last. And then for teachers who have this requirement that they get so many grades in the grade book, you know, you might do a sample writing, but only grade one line of the rubric in week 3, and maybe grade another line of a rubric in week 4, and then do a full-blown rubric grading at the end, just to keep it manageable so that they're getting some feedback along the way. That tends to be a question that gets asked a lot.
Other things that people ask you a lot?
Yes, they ask a lot about grammar.
Yeah.
The syllabus that we inherited from our textbooks was not a research-based syllabus. Okay. And so what it did was it implied that this was the right sequence for teaching grammar without any research to build it on. And so what I really want teachers to do is to think more about what we know from research students can do. Look at that proficiency piece that says, well, by the time they get to intermediate mid, they're only supposed to be able to do a paragraph, a good paragraph, topic sentence, concluding sentence, connecting ideas between the two in one time frame. Intermediate mid gets you a 3 on an AP. If that's the requirement for intermediate mid to get a 3 on the AP, now we'll build from there. But then wasn't it pretty unreasonable to think that we could put all of it in level 2 through the subjunctive, and then we'd be into the past conditional and conditional? And I mean, it doesn't make sense. I'm not saying to avoid those. And the other thing is to stop avoiding grammar in lower levels. When you use authentic text, students will be exposed to the conditional and the subjunctive and direct object pronouns. They'll be exposed in context. And so it lets them start to acquire the language the way a native acquires it. Many Spanish speakers would never be able to explain what's the difference between ser and estar. The difference of what's the difference between il and se in French. A French speaker probably won't have a ready answer. They'll just say, I don't know, it sounds right.
Like we do in English, right?
We need to let our students have more of those authentic exposures to language so they build that ear of, I don't know, it sounds right. And we need to remember that it's not a mistake unless meaning is lost. So if they communicate, it might be bring a smile to your face the way they do it. Just like when a 3-year-old talks to you in English, it sometimes brings a smile to a grandparent's face. It's like, oh, that's so cute. It's so wrong, but it's so cute. But we understood it, and that's not an error. And somehow we've got to get into our level, our beginning level classes, and say, it's okay to make mistakes. It's a part of acquisition.
Well, we have just a few minutes left, but I'm sure the Twitter conversation is going to continue. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. I really appreciate it.
All right.
So much to all of us. We have all have learned so much from you and from reading the book.
Well, my pleasure. And if anybody does have a follow-up comment, I'm not a big fan. I don't do a lot of Twitter. I'm old. But you can always email me at lterrell@gmail.com. So I try to answer if I get questions. So.
Okay. That's very generous. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
If you would like to comment or give feedback on the show, or be a guest on the show yourself, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at WeTeachLang. You can comment on any of the episodes on our website, or you can send a text message or leave a voicemail on our Google voice number, which is 629-888-3398. And if you leave us a voicemail, we may even play your question or comment on the air. And don't forget to tell your friends and colleagues about the show. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.